Okay, we are here for Awakening Together's monthly satsang. We're here with Locke Kelly. Welcome, Locke.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Great to be here with you.
Yeah. And Locke has written a book. I'm going to see if I can hold it up in front of the camera. There it is. It is called Shift into Freedom.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've had an opportunity to read several chapters. I wasn't able to read it all.
Okay.
I will go back and look at it. It's a fabulous book. Before we get to the book itself, I'd like you to tell us, if you will, Locke, a little bit about your own personal journey.
Sure. Yes. So it's interesting. As I look back, I can see in hindsight how, you know, I had little glimpses of kind of a connection to a greater source, to a sense of spiritual depth, to a sense of connection to something greater than myself all throughout my life. And I could see that I was intrigued. And when I had those glimpses, I would feel at peace. I would feel full of joy. I would feel very loving naturally toward other people. I would feel less fearful, less shameful, shame-based. I would feel, wow, this is great. I wonder what this is. What is this? Is this connected to something I'm doing, some place I am, some person I'm with? And then those glimpses would come and go. And then I had a fairly normal, you know, childhood and went along until, I would say, sophomore year in college, where I had three major losses in a six-month period. So first, my father, who had had been diagnosed with brain cancer, about kind of a tumor the size of a lemon in the left lobe of his brain, which is kind of the rational side of his brain, had an operation. He had gone back to a kindergarten level. And that summer, he had been bringing me his workbooks. So it was almost like just as when I became an adult, he went back and became a child, and he worked his way back up, and then unfortunately had another seizure, and he died that fall before my sophomore year. And then my best friend from the ice hockey team died in a car accident a few months later, visiting his girlfriend one night. And then my grandmother, who lived with us for the last 10 years, died within months after that. So I was at this place of feeling, you know, very burdened, and I didn't have many friends who had been through so many similar experiences. One or two had gone through a divorce or a loss or a parent died earlier, but it felt like I was bearing a burden. And one evening when I walked out of the library late at night, I just remember kind of talking to myself, or the sense of this voice that said, I don't think I can take this much longer. And the feeling was that at that point, I almost looked back or turned my awareness around to look, what's that? Where's that coming from? And something about the looking opened up my consciousness. It opened up my awareness to this sense of like moving out of my small separate sense of self, out of my thinking mind, and literally into the space around me, and almost into the night sky is what I felt connected to this boundless, you know, kind of natural but spacious dimension of nature, but also of me, and something bigger than me and yet me was the kind of feeling. And I started laughing and crying at the same time. I felt this relief. I felt connection to joy and support. I felt like everything was going to be all right. I just had this immediate kind of new knowing, and felt a lot of love toward the people who had passed away and my siblings who were dealing with the same thing. So that lasted for a while. That lasted for, you know, intensely that evening, and then even the next morning, and a couple days, and somewhat the next couple weeks, and then started to fade. And but I was able to kind of grieve in a more full way. And but that made me so curious to say, what was that? How do I find that again? Is that just unintentional, or is it possible to discover that intentionally? And that really became my question. Is this a natural dimension of human consciousness, which could be discovered and is more primary, or was that just a kind of a cathartic experience I had? And so that really led me, being in college, to say, all right, I think this is what I want to do with my life.
Wow. So you based your college studies on that. I see you are a licensed clinical social worker and have a master's in divinity.
Yes, that's right. Okay. So that pretty much, you know, was looking for it in school, out of school, everywhere, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So this, when you say you heard a voice and you looked back, was this was this the voice that most of us hear when we hear a voice in our head, like, wait, don't cross the street now, wait till you get to the corner, or, oh, you left your keys in the house, or that same voice, you think?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think it was my own voice. And in fact, upon reflection, it's actually the way we talk to ourselves all the time. And yet, so really it wasn't about the voice. It wasn't like, you know, a voice spoke to me or a still small voice or something. It was the looking back, that I realize now is basically the center of my particular approach to discovering this consciousness, is turning awareness around, is unhooking awareness from thinking and having it look to a kind of spacious awareness that's already here. And then how to do that. So it wasn't as much about hearing a voice, but about turning around.
So, Locke, do you think that this is the same experience that most people are calling enlightenment or awakening?
I think it's a glimpse of that. So I think, you know, there's definitely different definitions of enlightenment. That's kind of the big word. Right. But awakening, certainly, it was an awakening. It was an awakening, you know, from a kind of separate sense of self. It was an awakening to a kind of larger dimension of consciousness. And then it was kind of awaking back into my body and included my emotions and everything I was going through. So it wasn't just a kind of transcendent awakening, but it was almost a full circle awakening. It was coming back, you know, opening up and then coming back home to include everything. And so, again, it was a glimpse. So in some ways, the kind of method or approach I take is small glimpses many times. And then those glimpses of awakening are really not meditative experiences, but actually almost like shifting into a dimension that's primary but is in the background currently, and then slowly having the background or deeper dimension or higher dimension or wider dimension become more pervasive. And through those small awakenings, rather than waiting for a big awakening or, you know, leaving for the monastery or cave, it's possible through small glimpses many times to have small awakenings that lead you to realization that this is really who you are and have been and can then hopefully learn to live from there, just as we kind of grow up in any developmental phase of our life.
Is there more that you would like to share about your personal path with this before we look at your book?
I think, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, one of the things about what I realize and the way that I try to share about this is that it's not so much about me. It's not about the teacher or the guru or the transmission or the particular way that the doors opened for me or that I had this unintentional experience. People don't have to have had that kind of cathartic experience. That actually led me to be interested. And then what I discovered is that it's equally available in everyone as everyone. And it's a natural dimension of human consciousness. And so my story really is about learning how to share it. And often what I say is, you know, don't look this way, look that way. Don't look to me. Let me point you to look within you and then give you some pointers and hints and helpful ways to shift and discover the same potential that I found and many others have found and make it kind of the new normal.
Fair enough. Yeah. Good. And it's exciting to have you tell me that that if I learned this technique, that I will that is what I've been looking for on my own path.
Yes. Yeah. And there's different. There's not just one technique. It's kind of a method or approach that people have. There's different doorways for different kind of learners, but it's the same principles. You know, I guess that would be the last thing I would say on my personal thing is that I did take, you know, do kind of an exhaustive search and talk to, you know, and meet the great meditation masters and sit in different kinds of meditations and learn and compare and contrast and kind of deconstruct and reverse engineer the methods of the great contemplative traditions to see, okay, what is really working? What are they saying? One culture says this, one religion says that, but aren't they, if they're all going to the same place, they must just be using different language, and some of them leave out important parts or they skip from step 3 to step 8, and, you know, let's fill in the gaps, especially, and make it kind of contemporary.
Right, right. Well, let me say that in reading your book, and again, I found it very exciting, but I was a little bit, I don't know, bothered by the fact that it didn't feel very spiritual. It didn't feel very godly.
Right. Yes,
and,
yes.
And so and I have concerns about that. Tell me yes. Your thoughts about that.
So, I mean, I almost go so far as to say, like, okay, let me not impose my religion on you. Let me not use this kind of language, but show you a way to discover whatever you want to call it. So, but you will, when you discover it, people will use different language, but some will use God language and some will say it's the divine. Someone will say spirit. Someone will say God. Someone will say Buddha nature, someone will say Christ consciousness, somebody will say the Tao, someone will say it just is what is, someone will say, oh, this is life living itself. Mm-hmm. And so whatever that language, again, because I'm coming from this kind of assumption that it is human consciousness, so whatever your language, whether it's Christian, Buddhist, Taoist, Jewish, Muslim, or secular or scientist, well, that which, you know, I started by calling more spiritual language is a direct experience of whatever you want to call it. So I wanted to, you know, kind of make it less about intellectual belief and more about direct experience. And then, you know, as I kind of say that, you can bring any belief you want into it and it'll work. And when it works, you can call it whatever you want. But the main thing is it works. You know, in other words, let's find that which they were talking about. Let's find which these people who had God language, what made them say that?
Right. So tell me, if I, master the techniques in this book.
Yeah.
If I have the experience that you would have me yes. have as a result of reading your book, where am I? What do I have then?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is almost more of an unlearning than a learning. So it's really kind of a relief or, you know, the word many people use is letting go or surrender or a deconstruction or a not knowing. You know, it starts with a letting go of the current way of perceiving and creating a sense of identity that actually obscures us from knowing our deeper and subtler nature. So the first thing is to kind of step out of the one who is trying to find relief and trying to find God and trying to find love. And that one can't find it because it's actually made of a thought-based identity. It's a certain developmental pattern. It's a certain way of organizing identity and knowing that works well with things in the world, but can't know these subtler dimensions of consciousness. So it's kind of the unlearning of that, and a dropping into or a stepping out or tuning in to what, you know, whatever, you know, when I do this literally in a, you know, hour and a half session, I'll just give very little introduction of like, what are you going to find? Then I'll do these simple pointers and I'll say, what's here? And people will say, love. They'll say joy. They'll say relief. They'll say peace of mind. They'll say, freedom. They'll say, fullness. And then the next one will say emptiness. And then someone will say, oh yeah, fullness and emptiness. And then someone will say, unity and oneness and, you know, so all these things we've been looking for, right, literally from people off the streets, if they know how to shift out of, interestingly, like the attempt to look for it, or the looker that's trying so hard to willfully find it, if that relaxes and you know how to shift into a subtler dimension, what's revealed is this kind of unconditional love and freedom and a sense of well-being from which you can use thinking. And that's the thing, is that it's not a it's not a regression to being, you know, comfortably numb, and it's not a transcendence to be out of human condition, but it's actually it's kind of like being in a flow state of life or being in the zone. You know, you're in the highly optimal, you know, non-judgmental, you know, basic goodness that you are, that's underneath all your fear and worry.
Yeah. In the flow.
Yeah. In the flow.
Okay. Well, yeah. Tell us how this works.
So it's a system that sometimes, you know, isn't taught to the, you know, the Tibetan system isn't taught to the end of a 3-year retreat, you know,
right.
So you have to have so it might be, you know, within 30 minutes, it could be, and that's, but it's here already, and it just takes a little reshifting of the way we're organized. So, you know, one of the premises I think I was saying is that the main obstacle is actually the way we configure identity. And we're not doing it on purpose. And there's nothing wrong with personality or ego. So even when you step out of this separate sense of self, you actually, unlike some people believe, you're not killing your ego, you're not fighting it, you're not losing your personality. There's actually this little separate sense of self that's like behind our eyes looking out, that is a thought-based center that has co-opted our physical boundary programs and takes itself to be like a little entity that is pulling levers and running the show. It's the one that's always piggybacking on anything that goes wrong and making it a problem. And because it's looking for satisfaction the way our body does, it's made of thought. it can never be satisfied. So it's perpetually dissatisfied and perpetually fearful. And it just adds that onto any life situation that's good or bad, that's craving. When it gets something good, it tries to make it addictive. And when it's something fearful or bad, it goes, see that? I told you again, that's exactly right. Why I was telling you this, you know, you just shouldn't be, you know, you'll never get what you need. And that little pattern, when it relaxes, reveals a sense of well-being. And all it's really doing is innocently trying to solve a problem it can't solve because it's not supposed to. So it's like there's an ego function has become an ego identity. And so the ego identity just has to retire, or semi-retire. And then the ego function is just a function of this greater sense of being, that doesn't need to solve this problem. So, I mean, those listening or watching could simply try this very, you know, simple inquiry that they might find something that's here. Now, the question is not about your everyday problems, because, of course, we will continue to deal with our everyday problems. But the inquiry is this. What's here now when there's no problem to solve? So just let your awareness step out of the problem solver and kind of open up, drop down, and just notice what's here now. What are you aware of? But more importantly, what's aware? What does it feel like? What's absent? What's present? When there's no problem on the level of identity. What shows up? What goes away? And what do you notice?
Let me sit with that for a minute.
So it just takes like a minute of stepping out, just inquiring, what's here? What's this? Who's here now when you don't go and create a problem solver? When you don't look to thought and you don't go to sleep? What's awareness and aliveness like?
For me, it's a softer experience than I normally have.
Yeah. So kind of softening, relief, a kind of opening or the chattering mind kind of isn't central.
Yes.
And you notice that you're kind of not orienting by thought to what's happening.
Yeah, I can really feel, you know, we often talk about that sense of allowance.
Yes.
Or allowing things. So I can feel that allowance in that space.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really interesting is that when you step out of that dualistic mind that's trying to go, you know, subject, object, right, wrong, rather than trying to allow or trying to accept everything as it is, when you just unhook and drop and open, basically is the simple movements, that what you find is allowing and already accepting.
Right. Yeah. It's not something I have to try to do.
Yes, exactly. And that's kind of the paradoxical immediate possibility. That this is already here. And if it is, we could find it. And it just is so much more authentic because it is already, it just is allowing. And there's no fight against it.
Well, and I understand you to say, and this is just a glimpse of it. I understand you to say that by stepping into these glimpses, that we get used to being there and it becomes easier to be there.
Yes, that's right. So it's like any developmental task. It's like learning to crawl, learning to walk. The more you start to walk, at first you think, oh, well, this is like I was safer when I was crawling, you know.
Right.
Maybe I better stay down here and, you know, like And then you get up and like, whoa, boom. And, you know, you feel a little shaky, or you feel like the thought-based system is kind of going like, I don't know about this. This is, you know, not quite what I'm used to. And you just start to realize, no, I can talk from here. I can walk from here. And I'm happy, joyous, and free. And this is what I've been looking for. If it's already here, let me try to remain here. And then when I, you know, go back up just because of inertia and habit, just learn to return and train to remain. And then it's like any new habit of moving from the old operating system to a new operating system. And the new operating system is what's called awakened consciousness, God consciousness, Christ consciousness, whatever that language, Buddha nature, whatever that has been called is what is here. And that can be, that's what awakening in the middle of life can be like. And, you know, my interest has been, okay, well, let's give some tools to do that, rather than the only tools being, okay, go away to a monastery for, you know, 3 months, 3 years, or three lifetimes.
Right, right. So, when I learn to operate from this level of consciousness.
Yes.
Now, I told you I only read the first part of the book.
That's right. Okay.
So I don't know how this translates into, do I take this to work with me? It sounds like, what have you done for me lately? But
right.
But what do I get?
Yes.
From that, how does that translate into enlightenment?
Yes. So, I mean, the short answer is you get everything you want. You get, you know,
but
not necessarily like in the daily life. Daily life still happens. So it's not magical thinking. It's not like you get, you know, all the toys and prizes, you know.
Right.
You get the ability to be with whatever shows up in a way that's responsive rather than reactive. And you have a bigger sense of non-judgmental and a capacity to lovingly respond by saying yes and by saying no, you know, depending. So you feel this boundless quality, but then you have better emotional boundaries, you know. So the so what you get is that's what you get. And the unique thing here is that a lot of meditative and spiritual practices spend a lot of time in the initial practices of retreating or going to transcendent or being out of operational. Close your eyes for 20 minutes. You have to go to a quiet place with, you know, nothing happening. Or you have to go on a retreat, or you have to go to a monastery, or you go to a church, or you go to the woods, or you go to a cave, or you go for a long period, and then you get a quiet experience. And then a day after you come back, boom, everything comes back. So this is the main issue I was interested in fairly soon after saying, okay, how can you access this? And then how can you live from this? Because it ends up being that you can move from the transcendent to the immanent, the formless back to form fairly quickly, and then speak from there. And by speaking from there, you actually start to rewire the brain to get online.
Pardon me.
So, where you get is to a flow state. To, in other words, that's kind of the secular model of a natural condition that some people know in work, in relationship, a kind of loving, compassionate, easy to work, not looking to thought all the time, not straining and concentrating, not, you know, working manically at something. But literally like, okay, I'm doing things and it's easy because everything's been trained. You have, you know, they say in a flow state in terms of high functioning people that they've trained 10,000 hours, you know, in order to program their memory and their brain and their, and then because they program that, they are, they come, you become an expert. And so you don't have to think about it. So you do something by heart.
Right.
So my premise is that we've done 10,000 hours of walking. We've done 10,000 hours of language. We've done 10,000 hours of typing. We've done 10,000 hours of relating to other people. Those are all online.
Right.
So if we can shift into this new operating system, which is what these kind of glimpse practices give you a taste of, then you just right away, almost from there, you start talking and walking, and you start slowly. You're like a baby Buddha or something. I'm just talking a little slower, but if you trust that you can do it, you start to get it, you know, start to get yourself, you know, off the training wheels and into the feeling of, oh my God, I'm living from a less reactive, more loving, compassionate, naturally compassionate, and I'm not trying to be accepting. The acceptance is showing up, and I'm not doing it. What's going on with that? And so that's the kind of awakening to this nature, true nature, source of mind, this already awake capacity of human beings, which is what people describe when they describe awakening backwards. They say, well, it was already here. Well, but you know, most of them, it's like, yeah, but you did 30 years in the monastery, you know, like, and then you said it was already here. In fact, one of my teachers was like that. But fortunately, what he said is, yeah, I did three retreats, and now I'm giving it out to everyone because at 8 years old, my uncle showed me this, and it's the same now as it was when I was eight.
Wow.
Those 9 years of retreat didn't add anything to that. It's the same. So then why not discover it? And you know, it's not like instant enlightenment or something. It's small glimpses of awakening and then training to integrate. So there's kind of a direct recognition, but then a gradual learning or development or unfolding that follows, that you can kind of navigate. You're kind of surfing the learning, from a new way of being though.
And you get better and better at it.
And you get better and better. It just becomes easier and easier. And you go, you know, two steps forward, three steps back. And you go, you know, two steps forward, one step back. And but as long as you know that it's a normal, you know, that's kind of one of my premises in writing the book is to say, this is a normal stage of human development. This is not for, you know, just an esoteric thing or for the special few with Olympic you know, skills of meditation, that this is like something we all have capacity for that we didn't know we had until, and mainly because we didn't know how to access it, because it's not accessed through will, through ego, through mental, intellectual abilities, through effort, through our five senses. It can't be known in the way we know everything else. But once the awake, what I call awake awareness is known by itself, then it knows everything else. Then it knows all your senses and your emotions and your thoughts and your capacities. But it's that little trick of the paradoxical discovery of how to know it and what knows it that really makes the difference.
So this this compassion, all these good qualities that we would be cultivating if we were coming at it from the other angle.
Right.
These are natural because we're no longer focused on the personal self.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Because that, and it's not even the personal self. Again, it's kind of like that's been. The words that have been used to talk about this thing I'm talking about have been like personal self or personality or person or ego,
right,
or self-centeredness but it's not your ego function, and it's not your personality. It's another little thing that we can't even see because we're looking from it.
Right.
And it's kind of only when it relaxes and you realize, oh, my personality's still here. Oh, it's just more relaxed. You know, it's like you said, it's more, you know, allowing. It's softer. My personality's here, but it's the soft side of my personality. And yet you have courage. You could act strongly if you needed to because you're not, you don't have as much fear. So there seems to be this premise that the people in awakening have said that our basic nature is good, which is kind of a little different than our basic nature is sinful, you know. So it's interesting because it's important. And I think that other premise can keep people working very hard or giving up working, which is kind of the Protestant principle, became, no, you can't work at all. It's by grace alone and the signs, you know, then the Puritans and the signs that you made it or you're rich or something like that. So, you know, it became like this crazy, you know, don't do anything, wait for grace. And then, you know, grace and luck. And, you know, so there's something in between. And the premise is that grace is already here, that it's already like air. And we just can't see it. And we're looking through it, waiting for it to come. And then when the thing that's obscuring drops away, we think, oh, grace just came this for this moment. But it didn't just come for the moment. It was there. So once you realize, oh, it's already here. I just need to get out of my own way. But how to do that and what is it that's getting out of your way becomes the thing that I decided I need to write a book about, because it's a little different than the things that are said about ego or personality or self. That's, you know, not self. You're not this self. It's a self center. It literally is like as if you've created a little center in yourself, a little mini me that's looking out of your eyes, and that little mini me relaxes, and then the judgmental part's gone, and the commentator, and the all those little battles, and then you're there with this kind of new natural, what I call effortless mindfulness. So there's an effortless awareness that's already aware without our help, and that's kind of the base of all this I call awake awareness.
Yeah, I can feel the lack of struggle and striving and searching in what you say.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but it's amazing to me that this can all start with this slight shift in perception.
Yes, because that's the thing is like, okay, so if the natural true nature is here, Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, and there's something that's obscuring it, so it's just some way you either have to slowly deconstruct it until the other shines through, or the image I use is as if we're living in a small storm cloud and we're trying to clean it up and we're trying to find within that storm cloud, this is me, I'm a storm cloud, I'm trying to be a bright, fluffy white cloud or fluffy cloud. And I'm trying to watch out for the lightning and, you know, move all the pieces around. And then what I'm saying is, okay, rather than do that, step out of the cloud, drop down, open up, step back, and discover that you're the sky. And feel what that is, to be spacious, contentless, boundless, and yet alert, awake, to itself, to the space, to the feeling of no thing. And then once you feel that, come on back into the cloud fairly quickly and include and welcome everything. And then stay primarily the sky within the cloud, which can never be hurt by weather.
Well, it sounds good, but
this is the radio pitch. This is the radio version of the description. But it isn't the description. I mean, I could, you know, spend the rest of the time going through a series of exercises. That's one way to do it. Or I have not only a book, but probably the more important piece that I created was just a 3-CD audio or download of the practices in the book. And there's about 30 practices that are built in a series of how to do this. And you can listen to them because it's hard to read a practice.
Right.
And do it at the same time. So a few of them I made so you could do them, and I wrote them all out so you could look back at them. But if you go through the audio isn't me reading the whole book. It's actually just a little introduction and then each of the practices and I say in the next practice, we're going to build on the last one and we're going to do this. And you're going to learn how to unhook local awareness from thought and have it drop below your neck. So that you start to feel that there is a sense of that you can do it and that the dramatic shift that happens. You know, so two of the main shifts of consciousness are from head to heart, right, and from thinking to, like I said, from cloud to sky, or from thinking to a kind of spacious awareness. You could call it open mind, right? Open-mindedness. You know, but literally that your mind is non-thought based are the two radical experiences that people have. And they're literally, you know, very, you know, people who are highly educated, and they're like, well, wait a minute. There's no way I can be aware without thinking. Thinking is, I think, therefore I am. You know, I think, therefore I am, right? Isn't that right? I mean, that's what we all learn. Well, just see, you know, and people could do this right now. You could just simply like feel like awareness is identified or attached to thinking, and awareness could just step back and just become aware of your smile from your smile, and then let awareness be aware of your jaw from your jaw, and then let awareness drop. And not look up to thought, but just know your throat from within your throat. And then let your awareness drop below your neck. And then not looking down from thought, not looking up to thought, just let this awareness know your upper torso from within your upper torso. Not going down to sleep, not going up to thought. What's it like to feel the aliveness, the space, and the awareness where your breathing is happening, and yet not orient by thought? So notice what thought-free, embodied, open-hearted awareness is like. What do you notice?
I find it very difficult to do that myself. Because I want to jump it up into thought and analyze it and describe it and make sure I'm getting it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of that kind of mind. And that's the mind that we think should be able to study theology or read poetry or read scripture and it will get it. But it literally... The strange thing, and what meditation is about and prayer is trying to do, is turn over, let go, step out, surrender, drop into a non-conceptual, awake, emptiness that's awake, a spirit that's invisible but knowing. And that's the key, that literally is palpable. That's not a theory, and it's not something else. It's actually a natural dimension of our consciousness that when we shift into that, there we are. We've discovered, uncovered what has been described in this language that we thought was talking about something else.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm finding, yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I have noticed for years that when I had a quote unquote really good meditation, my hands felt small. They seemed like someone else's hands.
Okay.
You know, from the inside out, even feeling them. Yes.
Okay.
They felt
so as if they weren't, as if you could feel the space around them, or as if there's more, like as if they're not as solid.
Right.
Yeah, because when your awareness fills your whole body, and I do an exercise couple like that. One is like unhooking awareness, first noticing that the way we use attention is be aware of your hand, be aware of your hand, be aware of your hand. And then if you don't look at your hand, you unhook awareness, you let it know your shoulder, your elbow, your wrist, and know your hand directly from within your hand, then there's no boundary to the hand because you're not visualizing it. And so it's small, meaning in some ways it's only the vibration sensation of your nerve endings. It's not your idea of the hand, and it's not it, so you're actually being embodied is literally feeling in some ways smaller in that you're not as you know, like dense, but it's in some ways you also feel boundless. You also feel like spacious and yet, you know, kind of subtler, right?
Yes. Yes. It's a different way of describing that softness. That
yes, that's right.
Before. Yeah.
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 That's right.
And I wasn't sure that I would ever get this until I came across. Well, actually, I was explaining to my husband what I thought that you were saying, and I said, "It seems a little bit like, you know, when you look like when you're like at the baseball game and you look through the fence, and at one point you can see the fence, and if you shift,
yes, that's right,
then the fence kind of disappears."
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a good way. Yeah,
that's a very good way. It literally is a figure ground shift or a background foreground dimension of finding spirit or grace or whatever, Buddha nature, true nature. It's already here. It's just covered over by the foreground noise and looking to the chattering mind and the thoughts, looking to thoughts and then looking out from the thoughts at everyone and creating the subject object. And when that just drops, then everything changes.
As you just demonstrated.
As my earplugs came out, as my hands came down. So, so that background foreground, rather than being in the foreground, you step out of the cloud and then you see the cloud and then you almost move into a panoramic kind of awareness, mm-hmm. where you kind of see everything at once. And you're not pinpointing, everything from a small subject object way of seeing. And then that softens your view and it softens your heart and it literally changes, what's primary in your consciousness. So that's really what we're doing. We're saying that it's already here within your consciousness. So we're just navigating it the way that most things in what we do when we learn is we're changing our consciousness. We're changing our, by learning information, we're changing our consciousness by adding information to memory, you know. So, you know, by learning to do a dance step or a sport, we're changing our consciousness by training our body to do something. So by learning, sometimes I talk about it as like learning to drive a car is kind of about the same amount of moves as learning to recognize this awake awareness. I think it takes about the same amount of time. Like you have to adjust the mirror and then you have to remember a little bit. Okay. Put it in gear. Know what's this. You have to, and then literally when you're driving, you have to learn not to look at everything. You have to drop into this trusting panoramic awareness. and develop confidence or trust, and then it becomes second nature. And that's kind of a good, good metaphor for the first level of awakening that this brings. And there's, you know, there's deepening of it, and there's more spontaneous capacities that develop, but just the first couple levels, I think it takes away 60% of your suffering.
Wow.
Like it's just like immediately the first levels, because the 60% is the piggybacking of this anxious, small, perpetually dissatisfied part of you that is always piggybacking anything that goes wrong or anything it wants that thinks it goes right. And that part drops. And then you've got your 40% of your regular problems. You know, like, oh yeah, I'm not so good at that, and this is not going well in my life. I've got a loss here and that. Okay. But the 60% is like, who is it appearing to? And who is appearing to is changed. And that immediately changes the whole ballgame.
Are you familiar with Michael Singer?
Yes.
Yes, it's so are we talking about the same chattering, the person that chatters in his book?
Yeah. Yes, the same kind of chattering mind, yes. Yeah. The method's a little different, but the description of the problem is the same, and same as, you know, a lot of people who have really looked closely, they'll see that chattering mind. Eckhart Tolle talks about the same thing. You know, Buddha, you know, Christ, you know, a lot of people, but as you say, yeah, there's a little more modern way that our culture can hear it maybe clearer.
Right. I am opening your book because there were a couple of things in here. Let me see.
Okay.
Yeah, you talk about three stages, waking up, waking in, and waking out.
Yes.
Can you describe those for us?
Sure. Yeah. So often what I found is that people describe just waking up as kind of that movement from kind of being ego-centered or self-centered to anything related to like dropping that, stepping out, to not knowing, to not being caught by the chattering mind. So that's kind of, you wake up from that ego center, and then you wake to the alternative system of knowing, which is this awake awareness. And then as that awake awareness, which is formless, contentless, and yet awake, you wake in back into your body to welcome your thoughts, feelings, and emotions, rather than remaining as a mindful witness or a big sky witness or a pure awareness, or a, you know, kind of spaced out, being out of your mind. You come back, you recognize the awareness, and then that awareness wakes back in to your body. So you feel like you're inhabiting, your body, and then you discover you've kind of dropped from head to heart, mind, and then the waking out is the discovery of that compassionate and creative ability to relate and create. So you wake out to relationships and work and love and everyday life. So that becomes the living of it.
So that's
is the waking
cycle.
Out.
Yes.
So that's the whole cycle. Yeah. Wow. So it's kind of trying to just use little simple ways, but not to stop halfway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the idea, is that, you know, I think it is possible, and I see it now, and people even who are reporting, my book has been out, you know, about a year, and I'm getting, you know, reports from people in New Zealand and Denmark and, you know, never met me, just read the book, do the audio practices, and they're just saying, my life has changed, I'm able to go to work from here, and I'm not, you know, either I've done 30 years of practice and I didn't realize what I was missing, or I really didn't do any practice, and I just picked this up kind of naively, and it just seemed to fit. And I'm now everyone, you know, and what they say is that it's not just me. It's like they say, I didn't even notice it at first. I knew I was happier, but then everyone else in my life starts saying, what's up with you? You know, like, how come you're so different all of a sudden, you know? So it's quite remarkable.
So this is, it seems to me like this is something that we can do. There's a phrase that I have heard asked of teachers. It's like, can you be a CEO and become enlightened? And after coming back home and working 40 hours or close to it, I'm thinking, no, you can't. But it seems to me that by using this technique,
yes,
that in fact you can.
Yes. In fact, that's the goal, is to be, you know, to be able to do it in everyday life. There's nothing, you know, the faster moving mental tasks, the stronger emotional, are the more difficult. They're the advanced relationships and our advanced mental tasks are often last in line. But you get into the flow, and that's the idea, is that you're, it's not about the things you're doing. It's where you're operating from. You're just shifting into this other capacity that's in the flow state. From the flow state, you actually are having, it's kind of fun, just as fun to sit still or to do something. You're like, oh, this is like, because the silence is not the absence of sound. The silence is a dimension of consciousness that includes movement and includes sound and includes activity and thought, but it's still like voom, and it's like pervasive, and you know, it's the primary dimension that's come into the foreground and become the ground from which everything's kind of arising. But you're feeling it. It's like you've, the simplest way of saying it is kind of you surrender or shift your awareness and discover, oh, there's awareness that's already aware by itself, that's effortlessly aware. Just get on board with that. And that's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, no one told me about this. You know, you can call, and some people say, oh, that's the spirit. Oh, I know that. That's the, you know, they already know it, but they didn't know that they could just get on board.
That it was that easily accessible.
Yeah. And that then you learn to surf it, and then the other more intentional, willful part that says, no, we got to work harder to be, you know, to be safe and to be, you know, functional and to focus, you know, so come on back here and let's focus on it. It's like, wait a minute, I'm effortlessly focused. I'm effortlessly here. No, but we have to really chew on something. We have to double check and triple check and anticipate danger. You know, it's like, no, that's all programmed in. I've got that. That's what it feels like. You realize, okay, all that stuff about something could go wrong, You're still ready. I'm walking around New York City, you know, navigating the streets and, you know, taking the subway, and, you know, I'm just not worried, but, you know, I'm not a fool. You know, I'm not bumbling along either, because all that information's trained in there, but I'm living in, you know, some people said, I feel like I'm a Tai Chi master now. I'm just relaxed. I'm able to respond to things, but I don't have to think about thinking about thinking about thinking. And that's what changes. You go into this non-conceptual heart mind that is in a flow, and you feel light and soft and yet courageous. You know, there's kind of a strength to it too, because you feel confident or trusting, you know?
Yeah. Wow. It sounds fabulous. It does.
Yeah.
Where we all want to be.
Yes.
In fact, you say here, the core stories, I'm not good enough, something's wrong with me, I'm unlovable, are no longer convincing.
That's right. So that's a great thing that you picked out there, because I think that's where it goes. It goes not just these other, like, oh, joyful and happy and, you know, free. And it's like, okay, no, it's those core stories that the fear-based and the shame-based sense of like early pre-verbal things that seem to be the root. Like, oh, when I drop and meditate, all of a sudden all this stuff comes up and that must be really who I am underneath this all. So let me just skate on top of it all and try to be happy as I can. But below the core stories is a deeper basic goodness and this capacity to see through, oh, those are just patterns. And you don't, you know, intellectually have an insight about that. It's that this intelligence like just sees that, like, oh, there's a little part of me that's like a wounded child, but it's a pattern, it's a thought, it's just happening here, but it's not me, and it's just needs some love and attention, and it's then it relaxes and isn't, you know, coming up the back of my head and grabbing hold of me or grabbing my gut and, you know, and looking for a match in the world. Like, oh, see that? You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. It's like they lose their hold because it's almost like they detox. They kind of thaw out. They unfreeze and they let go of their bind, you know, in a way that, you know, having been a psychotherapist, you kind of can't intellectually find those or deconstruct those or analyze those away. They have to be like met with something more loving and more intelligently, clearly seeing that then lets them liberate.
Well, and this is coming at these things just completely from the opposite direction of where I've seen them, where I've been trying to work with them. And that is, you know, when I hear that thought, I go, okay, this is a habit energy or a thought pattern that I don't have to believe. I no longer want to believe.
Right.
But I'm having to like train myself one thought at a time or unpack my bag one thought at a time.
And yes,
it feels
right.
Like that might take a lifetime.
I can take a lifetime. Yeah. Cause they've got, you got to go. So it's like, rather than dealing with all the leaves that keep coming, we're going right to the root,
right.
But you can't quite go to the root until you have something that is healing, powerfully healing enough to heal the root. And so in some ways, that's the unique thing here, is that not only in the beginning are we waking up from the ego, but we're waking into the solution, what's called sometimes the ultimate medicine of awake awareness, that then wakes in to embody and embrace feelings and thoughts. And that's where this, you know, the real spiritual healing happens. You kind of can't do it top down from your mind and even from your spiritual ego or your spiritual superego. I can't believe you're not doing that. Those thoughts shouldn't be coming back, you know.
I've never done that. I don't know.
Right? You can't move fast enough to get them all. So this kind of, you know, that's the feeling of the ground of being. Literally, that's like the ground is this awareness of your being. And it's just when it's the ground and your thoughts are not the ground, positive or negative, then your thoughts will clear up and they'll serve you rather than you being at the mercy of trying to have positive thoughts or something.
Yeah, it sounds like a healing from the inside out.
That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
Good. Let me see what else. I marked up several pages here that just, it's a great book. Again, we're looking at Shift into Freedom with Locke Kelly. Mm-hmm. We've talked about a lot of this.
Okay.
Awakening means thought-based knowing no longer dominates our perception.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a tough one for even, you know, most spiritual traditions, let alone secular, let alone modern smart people, which a lot of people are. That wait a minute, you know, and you know, it sounds like, oh, isn't that anti-intellectual or something? Or isn't that like, are we going to become like, are you saying we should just be like, oh, you know, and then be dumb or something, you know, or something, you know, that we're kind of checking out or become a spiritual couch potato. And the thing is that the thought conceptual based is prior to wisdom. Wisdom is the higher knowing, and wisdom is non-conceptual. It includes concepts, but its source of mind is the dimension we're talking about. So in some ways we've got to name where we're going, like you said, you know, like we have to say, okay, no, there is this other system. We're not just leaving thought-based knowing. We're going to awareness-based knowing, and that will be able to use thought. So thought's not bad, you know, but it's become the master. It's not a good master. It's a better tool. You know, it's a better, you know, part of the family that, you know, when needed will be important. But if it's the central role, it can only go to a certain level. And so we've got to discover this non-conceptual, you know, what they call awake or spirit, invisible, alert, non-conceptual, sense of quiet that's listening to your thoughts. I mean, that's one pointer that I just started sharing a little bit more lately, is that sometimes people say, well, observe your thoughts or watch your thoughts. And really, most thoughts are inner talk and inner hearing. So if you open to this kind of spacious, awake awareness that's silent, and then that, from there, just listen to your thoughts. Just let your thoughts move through like clouds or birds. And then what happens is the silent space isn't dominated by the moving thoughts or the talking thoughts, because you're not on the train. You're not listening to the debate.
You're not wholly identified with those thoughts.
You're not wholly identified. And so you can't just say, well, don't be identified with them, because then you're going to try to mentally,
right,
okay, I won't be identified with them. You have to, so that's kind of what I figured out. It's like, all right, I'm going to have to show them how to do that. So, you know, that's where it gets a little unique, that you have to learn a couple little moves, like learning to drive a car, just your mirror, unhook awareness, let it come to hearing, let it open to the space in which sound is coming and going until you realize there is an awareness that is spacious and alert and silent and listening and is able to include and listen to your thoughts. And then as that spacious silence that's pervasive within your body, just familiarize yourself. Just rest. Just look from there. Just be that, and then speak with, and then add speech and add movement and add, but stay 51% awareness based. And that's about all it takes. And just doing that for 1 second, then 1 minute, then you lose it after 3 minutes, and then you come back again. And now it's 4 minutes. And now, you know, then that's how it kind of learns.
You know, it occurs to me that this, I don't even know what to call it, the shift. There you go.
Yeah.
The shift.
There you go. Shift into freedom.
Right. Shift into freedom. This shift that we're talking about, that I have spontaneously experienced it,
yeah,
throughout my life. And I've heard other people talk about it as well, in terms of, for example, everything feels a little surreal today.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's, so what that is, often the surreal is the halfway between.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes sometimes I say, you know, because if we're oriented in one way and then we wake up from that we're disoriented.
Okay.
And so you're kind of halfway in your mind, but halfway hanging on, halfway free, and halfway having a little more unconscious stuff happening. So your perception is changing. So then, so that's why I kind of say, okay, well, let's shift out of that and don't stop at the surreal and don't stop at the not knowing, but go from the not knowing that knows, discover the not knowing that knows. That's very clear, very simple, very alert, very ordinary. It's just very clean. And actually what happens is the projections of your mind kind of drop and you kind of see, oh, look at everything. It's just three-dimensional. It's just very simple. That's more the feeling. But when you're halfway, it gets a little trippy, gets a little like, whoa, you know, druggy or
right.
Like, oh, I'm free. I'm in the spiritual realm. But
that's not it.
It's an altered state. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's not it. But it's halfway there. It's starting to let go, but it's not quite all the way free into this awake consciousness. Yeah, because the awake consciousness really, it's important to kind of get a feel that it's the natural state, that even your everyday consciousness is the altered state. That you're not having a meditative experience. You're returning home to what should feel very clear, very simple. It feels very, you know, so sometimes people miss it. They go like, well, it just feels like just ordinary, like what I say. And they go like, well, there's no suffering, no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no, you know, like, but just simple like me. Like, yeah, that's right. It's not like bells and whistles and fireworks, and it's just freedom from suffering and ordinary capacity to be a human being, a full human being. That's really the deal. And it's often why people miss it when they think, well, maybe I need more spiritual experience or something. You know, higher states or something.
Well, I'm not going to ask you if you give a money back guarantee, but seriously, if I stick with these practices in this book, will I get it?
I mean, it's amazing. I find that people get it. You know, who never met me, the book is kind of the textbook. So in some ways, you really almost need to be guided through the praxis. So the audio, in some ways, people say, well, you know, which one? If I only bought one, should I buy the book or the CD or the audio? You can download the audio on Audible or Sounds True, you know, as right onto your computer and onto your phone. And you can listen to it on with your eyes open on the subway or on a bus or at your work. And literally they're like 3-minute to 8-minute guided progression of glimpses. So I always say get the audio, because the book is kind of trying to say, let me explain how this is ordinary. Let me just, when you shift into this, let me just tell you, this is not weird. This is not strange. This is you. You can do it. You have the capacity. Let me show you some neuroscience. You know, let me show you some psychological studies that Csikszentmihalyi did about flow state. Let me show you some neuroscience about your default mode network, which balances so you can feel you're equally inside and outside. So I literally like am supporting awakening through words. And at the end of every chapter is the written exercises,
right.
But it's all pointing toward, and here's how we do it. So let's go ahead and do it. And so the audio, and I have some online courses that kind of, one's called The Power of How, which is basically, how do you do it? So after you've done it, I kind of go through talks about, okay, so here's what unhooking means. You unhook, what is that like? Here, let me just go through it. So I kind of, you know, there's ways to get it fairly quickly. I just made it's not finished yet, but an animated 4-minute video about one of the practices. So it'll show like drawings and, you know, space between the words. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, so there's pointers. And it's the only difficulty is that it's new and it's unique and it's paradoxical. So it takes a little willingness to kind of like, and the main thing is your mind can't get it. So anytime your mind says, oh, I'm not getting it, right, then I say, that's correct. You're not getting it. And you never will. What do you mean? I'll never get it. No, not you. I'm not talking to you, your mind. I'm talking to you, the awakeness that can know yourself. And that's kind of the strangest thing I realize that I say a little bit in the book, but that it's really the thing that makes this work is that as I said, the mind can't get this, the intellect can't get this, the ego can't get it, the will can't get it, effort, attention can't even know it. The mindful witness can't even know this awake awareness. So I'm literally in the book and in the audio saying, all right, I'm talking to you, the Christ consciousness, the awake awareness, the Buddha nature. I'm talking to you that's already that awakeness. Would you please unhook awareness from thought and find the pure awareness that you are?
That's great. Isn't that great? The reader or listener just needs to get out of the way, right?
Yeah. I'm just, and that's why it's hard, because you can't, you're like, well, I'm not getting it. Well, try it, you know? And then when you get it, the one who gets it, then I had this guy who said, I wasn't getting it at first, but now, I mean, the only thing I could say is it's just so simple. It's just so obvious. I'm saying, well, wait a minute. You're saying it's obvious. Yeah, it's just obvious. It's just obvious.
But it wasn't. Like,
but it wasn't. Yeah, but that was before.
That's great.
That's kind of how it is, right?
Yeah.
It's obvious. Because it's so unique. It's not like, so the preliminary practices like, you know, chanting, one-pointed attention, yoga, mindfulness, develop a system that in some way calms the body and mind, but has nothing to do with this. In some ways, it has nothing more to do than this than going to the gym, taking a nice walk. They're calming you and focusing you, but they're not like the next step. You have to go there and then you have to let go of that. You have to step out. You're cleaning the cloud, calming the cloud, and then you can't calm it enough.
Right.
You have to step out. You have to drop down. You have to open up. So you could just open up right away, or you could calm a little, just enough, whatever you need to do until you step out. And then when you step back in, you discover, oh, I'm already calm and focused. So the calming and focusing of the second system is the one that isn't actually even related to the first one. So it requires this, you know, this other kind of shift. But what I try to do is say, yeah, but I think I can explain it a little bit. Like I can at least show you that it's not just luck or grace, meaning it's grace and that grace is here, but it's not like you don't have to wait for the unintentional awakening. Or you don't have to practice these preliminary practices over and over and over and over and over again, thinking, I'm getting closer, I'm getting closer, I'm getting closer. Because they're about ultimately focus to calm, calm to focus. That's enough. Right. As soon as you're calm or focused, like that could take you, you know, 3 minutes, or it could take you 30 minutes, it could take you 3 hours, it could take you 3 days, it could take you 3 weeks. That's fine. Whatever that is, that's enough. Then you're done. Now step out into this other dimension and come back. And then familiarize yourself with that effortless awareness, effortless mindfulness, and familiarize yourself. Then lose it. Go back to the system one. No big surprise. I say no big surprise. Just re-recognize. And then train to remain. And then lose it. No big surprise. Just re-recognize. And you just keep, okay, lost it. Come back. And then once you come back, now start typing, start talking, start walking. Okay, lose it. Unhook, return. Okay, now talk, walk, work. Oh, now it's happening by itself. All right, look at that. And then you're getting your whole brain is rewiring, and you're living in, you're starting to live an awakened life, which is just a natural stage of human development that's not, you know, not so out of possibility.
Accessible by all of us.
That's right. Accessible by all of us. Yeah.
That's great. Locke, so we're clear. Your website, can you give us your website address?
Sure. It's www.lockkelly.org. It's L-O-C-H, like Locke Lomond or Loch Ness, L-O-C-H-K-E-L-L-Y.org.
The book is available there as well, I assume.
Yes.
I know it's on Amazon because that's where I bought mine.
Okay. Yeah. Amazon, the book and the audio. And the audio again are the meditations, that you can download on your computer and your phone, and you can do them eyes open or eyes closed. So you can do them any time of the day.
Now, is that audio also called Shift into Freedom?
It is. It's called Shift into Freedom, a training in the science and practice. So the only difference is it adds that it's a training, and it's right on Amazon. You know, it's on Amazon. It's on my website. It's on Sounds True site. Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything you'd leave us with? Anything else you'd leave us with?
just I think maybe what you said is that the last thing you said, which is that it's accessible for everyone. I think that's really about the most important thing I can say, is that don't give up, but that it isn't just effort, and it isn't just willingness, and it isn't just dedication, that you've got to find a way that works for you. And the way that seems to access this awakening is a little different than the initial practices of prayer and meditation. There's a little, and you got to find out what that feels like. You really will feel it when it happens. And when you feel it, it's not that difficult. It's just new. It's paradoxical. It's unique. But it's like you said, it's like looking at the fence and then looking through the fence. It's like once you realize how to do that, you're like, oh, now I get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's what... So
well,
great.
I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for being with us here for Awakening Together Satsang.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Namaste.
Namaste. Be well.